This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Her Vantage, and this is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. There are over 15.9 million women in Malaysia, nearly half of the nation's population. Yet when it comes to representation, for instance, in the workplace, opportunities, for instance, in education or equal treatment, even within your own families, there still exists a disparity. I'm here with Yayasan Hasanah's MD, Shahira Ahmad Bazari, to delve deeper into the challenges that still obstruct women in Malaysia and what we as a country can do to continue to break down these barriers. Good morning, Shahira.
Good morning, Frida. How are you?
I'm good. We cut into the chase, lah. What are the challenges faced by women in Malaysia, you know, whether in education, the workforce, or the community at large? And I'm sure we can dissect each.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for the question. And I think you've heard about this issue of double burden, or the concept of the double burden. The majority of women are not just entrepreneurs or working people. They also have families, spouses, and other responsibilities. And I think that the traditional gender ideologies, you know, have contributed to the concept of double burden, because it posits that women are caretakers and men as providers, and each gender occupying their own year as such. So although today we know that attitudes about gender roles have become more egalitarian over the past decade, and I think we've made some good progress. I mean, you know, the main barrier preventing women from, I'd say, accessing the full benefits of economic opportunity, like I said, they bear the burden of the domestic responsibilities. According to the study by KRI, their State of Household Report 2018, about 2.6 million women in Malaysia, mostly educated and of prime working age, stayed out of the workforce to this double burden of home responsibilities. When women need to make a choice, you know, obviously they will make a choice that is right for them. And typically, you know, family comes first. And I mean, this challenge is, I mean, not unique to Malaysian women. It's common to many women around the world. And women seem to need to work harder in the masculine world and yet still face the stigma and discrimination and trying to break the glass ceiling and all of that. So the challenges are there, but I must say that, you know, we've seen really great strides and progress. I was just looking at some data. The 30% women club, 30% club, I think it's called. The last I checked this data many years ago, you know, I remember the data being, so 30% club is having a minimum of 30% women board representation in public listed companies. And then the last I checked was 11%. But today, the number stands at 25.6%, an 82% increase since 2015, which is amazing, which is, I think, collectively, women networks are working together to improve that number.
Right. You know, you talked about the roles, the double burden, right? The roles that we play, right? And I guess, you know, are these also societal expectations? Should we change these societal expectations? Is this something that we should be looking at?
So there's societal expectations. There's also religious kind of, you know, expectations and teachings and all of that. You know, I see this quite uniquely. I don't know. I mean, the way I look at it is that there is a reason why men and women were created different because both gender have a role to play in the world, right?
Right.
And if we understand the strengths of both these units of creation, then ideally we should be complementing each other. But obviously the world is not such a fair
right.
place. And women typically have to work harder. I mean, my favorite image, and every time I speak during the International Women's Day, there's this image of a man and woman having to run a race. I don't know if you've seen that image. And the man's pathway, right, his track is clear. And then the women's track has got crocodile lah, mountains lah, you know, all kinds of things that the women have to go through to finish the race. And that's what it is. But like I said, I think, you know, with more women getting educated, you know, we know in Malaysia, if you look at the public universities data, we have more women. And even in our work, Frida in Yayasan Hasanah, when we work with the B40 communities, oftentimes we get a lot more when we empower women. You know, they take care of their family better, they provide for the family well as well. So I do think that there is progress. You know, some of the things that I always advocate for is to the women folk is that, you know, we need to stay true to who we are. And the kind of contribution and the value we bring to the table. Women need to assert that.
Right, okay.
You know.
Right. And I want to talk about the initiatives just a moment. That very interesting, the image of yours, you know, you're talking about the crocodiles, everything. Actually, that path should have laundry. These are the things and that stops the progress.
Baby crying and all of that.
Just before we get into the initiatives that you've been doing to help Yayasan Hasanah has been doing, you know, so I noticed on the website that Yayasan Hasanah's involvement is in education, community development, environment, and art and event space, right? And I guess people don't know these are things that you guys are doing now, but what are you all doing in these areas and how do they all interlink and connect?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So the five pillars that you mentioned, we have knowledge as a fifth pillar, knowledge and research as a fifth pillar, were really chosen based on the need of the country. Right. So Yayasan Hasanah is the foundation of Khazanah National. When we were doing the strategy for the foundation, we looked at what were some of the key imperatives or pressing social issues or social needs for the country. So that's how the five pillars came about. But the largest investment we've made is in the education sector, because obviously, you know, we all believe that education is the greatest equalizer. And in that, you know, we do quite a lot of work in maximizing the potential of girls and boys in primary and secondary school. And then at the tertiary level, we provide scholarships. And the Yayasan Khazanah scholarship is a well-known brand and it's a premium scholarship. And for that, we look at, you know, the top cadre of talent in the country, and you know, they typically study in the top 20 universities in the world. And on community development, we actually look at community leadership and livelihood. So, you know, we strongly believe that you cannot have community interventions in silos, because a family's life is quite multidimensional, multifaceted. So, you know, it's not just about money is important. Obviously, you know, it takes them out of poverty, but there are other facets of their life that needs to be looked into as well. So typically, you know, we stay in a community for anywhere between 3 to 5 years and typically look at exiting when there are strong leadership in the community to self-organize for that community. And then, of course, the environmental challenges, you know, you can't really not do or look at climate issues because it's so prevalent. It's right, you know, in front of us right now. We're facing it daily. And so we look at quite a number of initiatives, forest conservation, fresh water, water security, some aspects of marine conservation as well. And then on the arts and public spaces, and I'm so glad that Hasanah as a foundation did not see arts and cultural heritage as something that is unimportant, given, you know, I mean, if you think about challenges of the B40 communities, but the arts and cultural heritage preservation, you know, I mean, it's the soul of the country, right? It's the soul of the nation. And it is essential. I mean, you know, last year we keep talking about essential and non-essential items. The arts is an intangible, right? It's a kind of thing that you take for granted, but when you don't have, and then you realize how empty your life is without the arts. So they're all interconnected in some ways or another, because if you think about families and communities, they're all in schools, they're all in, whether it's the urban poor issues that we tackle, so they're all quite interconnected.
All right, okay. We'll talk a little bit about how the women empowerment initiatives that you all have done across the country in just a moment. I'm here with Shahira Ahmed Bazari, Yayasan Hasanah's MD. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Breathe freely, Malaysians. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're You're listening to Her Vantage on Enterprise. Frida Liu here and Her Vantage, where we speak to women of influence and leadership. I'm here with Yayasan Hasanah's MD Shahira Ahmed Bazari. So tell us a little bit about what the women empowerment initiatives that y'all have done across the country.
So there are multiple models. We work with different partners. So as a foundation, we're a grant-making foundation. So we work with various social purpose organizations and NGOs. So there are many models, Frida. We have a model which is a microcredit model where Women of Will, one of our partners, you know, identify the target groups or individuals or women who is willing to undergo entrepreneurial kind of skills training. You know, teach them financial management, you know, how do you save or how do you procure your raw materials and all of that. Typically, quite a lot of them have certain things they'd like to do, whether it's jual kuih or, you know, whether it's F&B, whether it's tailoring or selling flowers. There's so many. And once they've completed the program, they're given interest-free kind of loan and as capital for their business. And if they do well, actually there are incentives to kind of increase that quantum where they can then grow their businesses and so on and so forth. But last year, as you know, quite a lot of the entrepreneurial capabilities, you know, these are daily wage earners, they were not able to go out. And I was quite heartened to see that so many of them were able to kind of just pivot online. And then we started having quite a lot of programs where quite a number of our partners like People Systems Consultancy or Masala Wheels, I mean, they all go and teach these entrepreneurs, you know, enhance whatever they're doing and then kind of like set up for them a social media account and how do you promote and how do you sell online and all of that. And this has been so great for many of these people that we support, the more vulnerable communities that we support. And, you know, and doing pretty well.
Right.
Doing pretty well, yeah.
Okay. Are they across the country?
They are, including Sabah and Sarawak.
When you do this, right, how are you measuring success? The fact that they're able to pay back their loan, that kind of thing. And I guess, what are the success rates when it comes to that?
So for us, ultimately, is percentage increase in income, right? So that, for us, kind of means success. But also beyond that is the stickability of that initiative, right? So
right. They
may record a 30% increase in income in the first 12 months, but are they able to then sustain it over a long period of time? So quite a lot of our conversations with our partners are just beyond a 12-month or 18-month kind of intervention. We encourage them to kind of come back and visit their beneficiaries and look at how they can continue to further support. So, I mean, we have multiple indicators, but our kind of... you say, you know, or where the rubber hits the road is income.
You know? Yes.
So for us, income, and we don't, you know, kind of celebrate because we want to make sure that that income is sustainable
right. Over
a healthy period of time.
How did the MCO / pandemic affect any of the initiatives and on the ground work and, you know, what you guys were doing and what do you all do instead?
Yeah, wow. Last year was quite crazy, isn't it? I remember 18 March, the lockdown happened and everyone was like, oh my God, what are we going to do? We did a quick survey because we wanted to check on our partners. How are you guys doing? What are you going to do? Can you go out? Can you go check on all of your, you know, people that you've been supporting, the communities? So we did a quick survey and obviously, you know, there were a lot of uncertainty, you know, quite a lot of partners were also worried about their own overheads and expenses. Obviously, they couldn't do fundraising at that time, but quite a large number of them were also worried about the communities that they've been supporting. So around about March, April, we decided to kind of award unrestricted funding to all of our partners. We gave them, you know, like a one-off payment to say, you know, go. I mean, it's just do whatever you need to do to kind of stay afloat or support your communities, buy PPEs, whatever you need to do, you know, pay salaries, you know. So we wanted to kind of be there for them because there were quite a lot of uncertainties. And then when the SOP became clearer, and I think JKM issued a SOP to say, okay, NGOs, you can go out, but you need to do whatever X, Y, Z. So then, you know, and none of these NGOs actually stayed back. You know, they were all just wanting to get out there and do something for their community. And they did. So there, obviously, there's slight impacts, you know, from a timeline perspective, because for a good period of time last year, we couldn't go out. So nothing much could have been done. But where the partners could still continue to engage with their beneficiaries through online. So like we had a lot of school programs. Kids were not in school, so we couldn't do those school programs. But where the intervention was for teachers, it could continue because teachers could get online and do the courses and all of that. So, you know, it's really about being flexible and adaptive and also supportive to the community and to our partners.
Right. What else do you have lined up for this year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, last year was also a different year for Hasana because, you know, we grew by 4x. So, you know, from the total number of beneficiaries we supported, total number of projects we supported, total number of funds we disbursed. We were also, you know, partnering with the Ministry of Finance through all of the stimulus packages. And given the humanitarian crisis and the urgency, you know, of the deployment with the various stimulus packages, MOF extended that some funding to us to deploy quickly. You know, we had to do it in an expedient manner. So that was last year, and it looked like it's kind of continuing this year. So you talk about this year, I think we're still on COVID response mode across, you know, whether it's urban poor situations, education, you know, providing laptops for children. So we're still implementing some of these programs, but we are also focusing on some of our partners and our grant this year and looking to deepen some of our impact. So Frida, Yes Hasana celebrated our 5th anniversary last year. We were incorporated in July 2015, building on 10 years of or 9 years of CSR from Khazana, obviously Khazana, and then we all kind of got streamlined into a foundation. And so we did our strategic review for the next 5 years, and we're looking forward to kind of deepen our impact and do more for the third sector and the sort of socially.
Right. Okay. So this is the plan for the next 5 years. So what is the third sector?
Third sector is non-profit sector.
Okay. So this is the work. So you've got your work, you know, planned for you for the next 5 years. Anything else you'd like to add?
You know, we started the conversation about women, and I wanted to kind of also maybe end the conversation for women. You know, many people ask me, you know, what can we do? And oftentimes you feel like you need to be in a position of power to do something. But I always advocate to say that for every lady, young women, girls out there, you know, always think about how you can make life better for the next generation of women in the smallest way possible. You can assert influence even if you're an executive or even, you know, lower rank. You can assert influence, and I think every little step that you take towards that will make life better for a working woman in the future. You know, we're always standing on the shoulders of those before us. I mean, I have multiple examples of that, but I don't think we have time.
Well, share one example. I think it's great. You know, but I know if there is a ripple effect, right? The little thing that you do, you know, whether it's just sharing something on social media has, you know, a nice ripple effect, right? You can make the ripple effect a good one or a bad one. You know, you have the choice. Yeah. But share a story. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, for example, you know, and this is the kind of things that I mean, I remember in my previous job when I first joined the organization. So first of all, I underwent a long process of an interview. And then in that interview process, I found out that I was pregnant. And you spoke about cultural biases, right? And I thought, oh my God, you know, are they still going to hire me because I'm pregnant? You know, this is your unconscious bias, right? And so I called my potential boss. I said, you know, I just need to let you know. I need to declare. And then he said, that's not a problem. It's not a problem. It's okay. You know, we will continue with the interview process. So that was, I'd say, okay, good. So that is when you are blessed with a good employer or a good organization to work with, because not all organizations in the country are like that. And then when I joined, I realized that organization didn't have a nursing room for mothers. I saw that they were, you know, so I was pretty junior, but I felt strongly about providing a nursing room for the women folks in the organization. They are going to the toilet, la surau, and all of these things, right? Then I wrote to the HR manager and said, you know, can you consider having a nursing room in the organization? And he said, oh, you know, if you could get all the women folks in the organization to support your request, my request. It's not my request. I'm requesting this. And it's like, you know, we'll see what we can do. So obviously I undertake this survey and I ask all the women, of course, 100% support. And then I went back to HR and then, you know, about a year later, we all had a nursing room. And so these are little things, right? And you know, you left something behind for your women folk. The other example, this was a couple of companies before this. It was a town hall and then the CEO asked, okay, you know, how are you guys doing? Are y'all? And so it was a period where we all had to work really late and the women folks were feeling quite unsafe having to walk down to the car park at night, you know. So so somebody just said, you know, we really feel unsafe walking down to the car park. It's quite dark. Almost immediately, the CEO said, okay, we'll do something about it. And about 2 weeks later, they hired a guard or something to actually accompany the women folks down after seven. If you're walking down to the car park, you're accompanied to the car so you feel safe. So these are little things, right? At any level of the organization that you're in, whether you're a junior manager or a senior manager, you could make these little improvements for the women folks within the organization. And there's just multiple examples like that where life becomes a lot better.
And I think it's so interesting, right? Because it was just a case of speaking up, right?
And speaking
up, and the courage to speak up and all that. So we all need the courage. Thank you for spending a little bit of your morning with me.
We can chat forever about women empowerment.
I know. So thank you again for your time. I've been speaking to Yayasan Hasanah's MD, Shahira Ahmed Bazari. You've been listening to Her Vantage on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.